Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. The new archaeological discoveries in Israel is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I'd like to invite you along to come and join us for a Sunday morning service. We gather at 10:30 every Sunday morning. If you don't live in the area, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button and find the Lutheran Church nearest to where you live. Go along and pay them a visit. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support, which makes it possible for Lutheran Radio UK to stay on the air and proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ worldwide. Today, we are very pleased to welcome Professor Shahar Shiloh. He has an MBA and an MA in history. He's currently a PhD student at Haifa University. And he, for many years, was in charge of educating and training all of the national tour guides for the Ministry of Tourism for Israel. He recently gave a number of lectures in the United Kingdom, and we are very excited to have him with us as we will be discussing recent archaeological finds that help us better understand the Bible. Professor Shiloh, it's lovely to have you on Lutheran Radio UK.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning to all of our listeners. This is going to be a great experience.
Good. And now, we were talking about how, as we read the scriptures and enjoy the wonderful accounts and stories, how archaeology can help us really understand and better experience the Holy Word. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that actually happens and what archaeology's role is in helping our faith?
Well, if I may offer this, we need to understand that we have no doubt, none of our listeners have any doubts whatsoever with the Holy Scriptures and about the stories. What we are doing with archaeology, and I will give you 60 seconds about what archaeology is a comprehensive understanding and enhancing our experience of reading the Bible. And we need to remember that archaeology is maybe introduced to us through Indiana Jones and the beautiful movies, but basically this is a 150 years old science, or should I say sub-science, that was actually invented and developed in the UK. And this science takes people to actually excavate the ground of ancient levels, of ancient people, and look into their places and look into their material culture. Now, for instance, if we talk about fishermen in the times of the Bible, and we go and we dig fishermen's places like villages, that goes along very nicely with it. If we talk about specific wine culture that has specific pottery, and I can date that pottery back to the times of Jesus, again, our understanding is being enhanced. So archaeology basically touches base with what we call material culture of human beings along different times through our whole history. And this is our way, scientists, historians, to trace back the stories of the Bible.
Now, you've mentioned some of the about archaeology, but what are some of the great finds that have been unearthed over the last sort of decade or two, in your opinion?
Well, this is a hard question. I would say since in Israel today, we talk about something like 37,000 archaeological sites from all different times. As our talk here refers to the biblical times, from David, I would say, to the times of Jesus, then the most, I would say that the most impressive ones right now are within the holy city of Jerusalem, next to the Temple Mount, in an amazing site called the Biblical City of David, which will be starring this, you know, documentary. And I would say around the Sea of Galilee, the places where the ministry of Jesus took place in most of the time through the times of the New Testament, some of those places such as Magdala, such as Beit Saida, which we call Bethsaida in English. These places were enhanced amazingly throughout the last two decades due to the fact that they're being heavily excavated. And now we understand the scriptures a lot better.
So can we go to Jerusalem then? Let's start there. What were some of the great finds that have been unearthed at the City of David? And can you tell us sort of in the geographical area where City of David is located in Jerusalem?
Yes, sure. Well, the City of David is actually the birthplace of ancient Jerusalem, where the Jebusite fortress once stood, according to the second book of Samuel, the one that David captures and takes it and makes it basically the city of David, that Jebusite fortress lies within the lowest hill of eastern Jerusalem, which is today a bit south of Temple Mount. That is a lower place by the Palestinian village of Siluan, and that is right south of Temple Mount. This is where the biblical Gihon spring emerged from the ground, and this is why the ancient city of Jerusalem was located so low, topographically speaking, because it needed to be very close to the water. In these times, water were the only place that one could actually inhabit a city. So David captures that city, and within the last 150 years, the place has been heavily excavated, but only in the last 15 years have we discovered amazing stuff that has to do with the Christian times of Jerusalem, and that is the times of Jesus. And if I may refer to the first phrase, we are opening the book of John, chapter 9, verse 7, and we learn from John 9, 7, that Jesus performs a miracle in Jerusalem, one of only two miracles that will take place in the city of Jerusalem. That miracle is healing the blind man in the Pool of Siloam. And the Pool of Siloam was actually excavated from 2004 and was only introduced to the world back then because the place that people used to go to was the wrong pool. It was a Byzantine pool that was only established 400 years after the times of Jesus. So now we have the original Pool of Siloam from the Roman times, from the times of King Herod, which he built it. And that is the amazing Pool of Siloam that one can actually go to today. And from there, you can walk on the pavements from the times of Jesus, actually tracing the footsteps of Jesus from the Pool of Siloam all the way up to the Temple Mount in the original drainage systems of Jerusalem of Herod's time and Jerusalem of Jesus' times. And this is a significant find for us because along that route, which we have discovered lately, as I said, only 10 years ago, along that route, people can actually walk today and see findings which we have located along the route, such as silver minted coins of half a shekel, which was once the annual tax that every Jewish person had to bring to the temple. We have traced back an amazing golden bell, which once used to be a part of the high priest robe, the robe of the high priest, which is so beautifully arranged in a ritual bath, which is where we found it. It's an amazing finding, which one can see as you walk there. You can actually get to the southern steps of the Temple Mount from a new way, which is that paved road from the times of Jesus. So I would say that enhancing the understanding of the times of Jesus within the city of David has gone through a great leap just lately. In the last few years, it has been open to the public, and one can enjoy it right now.
And it sounds like you're going through the drainage system, so this is underground.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Basically, you get to the Pool of Siloam, which is on the lower part of the city of David. There is an open sky site, which you can, of course, read the New Testament from and pray. This is what thousands upon thousands of people are doing on a weekly basis. And then many of them are going underground into those tunnels from the ancient times, and they go all the way up to Temple Mount. If I may remind our listeners something very interesting happening here, because if you read the Bible well, Jesus performed only two miracles within Jerusalem, unlike over 30 different miracles which Jesus has performed in his ministry in the Galilee. And I wondered, why is it? And I went to read the Bible, theologically speaking, I would say, interested. And I tried to understand, why would Jesus perform only two miracles within Jerusalem? Why was Jerusalem neglected and left aside? Because it should be a lot more important than the Galilee. This is a place of crucifixion and resurrection. So I found out that the two miracles are actually described in John. John 5 describes and tells us the story of the miracle of the healing of the lame, the disabled, in the Pool of Bethesda. And John 9 talks about the miracle of the healing of the blind man in the Pool of Siloam. And then I went back to the Old Bible, to the Old Testament, and looked at the conquering of Jerusalem by David. And this is the 2 Samuel 5 chapter, the chapter 5 in the second book of Samuel. And I urge our listeners to go to their Bible and read it. The Jebusite king stands on the wall, and he mocks young King David, and he tells him, "Thy shall not come here until you remove the blind and the lame." And David hated the blind and the lame, says the Bible, And then David tells to his troops, whoever wants to conquer the Jebusite fortress, we should assault the fortress through the gutter, through the pipe. And they actually conquer the whole Jebusite fortress via the pipe of water, via the water system, which we have traced back, and now we can walk in it today, in the Jebusite fortress, in the gutter itself. So I'm telling you that there's a great connection here between David and his future descendant, Jesus. Both of them would have to address an issue in Jerusalem, not to walk into the city until you remove the blind and the lame. David does it with power, as he's a general and a fighter. Jesus is all about mercy and grace. Jesus comes to the city, and he addresses the same issue, only this time it would be with mercy and grace, and he would heal the blind and the lame. And this was my answer to the theological question of why did Jerusalem get only two miracles. The connection between David and Jesus in the city of David is, I would say, enhanced once reading the Bible right there.
And you mentioned that citadel is available for inspection by tourists today, and all the other finds. And you were talking in your lecture in London here recently about that bell that was on the high priest's robe. Could you describe that just for us real quickly as well, please?
Yeah, it's beautiful, because in the book of Exodus, we are learning from the book of Exodus that the robe used to have 72 golden bells and pomegranates, it says. Bells and pomegranates. We were wondering, why does the Bible speak about pomegranates? Because usually pomegranates are meant for, I would say, this is like silver pomegranates, which we usually find on the great Torah scroll books. They are meant as jewelry for Torah scrolls usually, and we have them made of ivory. We found lots of ivory, small pomegranates from the biblical times in different places in Israel. But this time, the golden bell is a golden bell. And why does the Torah, the Holy Bible, speaks about bells and pomegranates on the robe of the high priest? So we were so curious, we took that small bell. It's beautiful, it is very tiny, and it rings as it did ring 2,000 years ago. We sent it to have an MRI and to have an X-ray. And the amazing finding was that the small tongue inside the bell, made of pure gold, is actually in the shape of a pomegranate, which is a masterpiece of art, because they shaped it so nicely and so beautifully and so tiny, so small, but actually you have a pomegranate within a golden bell. And I guess that if you come, we may be looking together for the other 71 golden bells which are still missing. We have only one right now, but this one is an amazing finding, and it was found right next to the Western Wall on that walking pavement that was established in the times of Jesus, the same site that I described before, which is the way walking from the Pool of Siloam to the Temple Mount.
You're on. I'm there with you. Now, you also mentioned in your lecture about the discovery of evidence that Bethlehem was in existence and has been in existence for a long, long time. Can you tell us a little bit about that very exciting discovery, too?
Yeah, well, again, we have the knowledge from the scriptures, which we are very much faithful in, and we have the lack of knowledge sometimes from historical documents or archaeology. Here, we had a gap, a long gap in between Bethlehem of the scriptures, from the time of David, at the time of Yishai, the father of David, and then, of course, when St. Mary comes to give birth in Bethlehem, from the times of Jesus. But we had a long gap here, and a big one, because we had no documentary, no documents, no archaeological findings from Bethlehem before the 4th century AD, meaning the first description, should I say the first proof to the existence of Bethlehem so far, was from the 4th century, and that was a book written by a Christian historian. And lately, 4 years ago, we have discovered an amazing small imprint. This is like basically an impression of an imprint, of a seal, from the biblical times that talks about the city of Bethlehem in the 8th century BCE. Meaning, we're talking about Bethlehem of the time of King Hezekiah, of time King Uzziah, of times of prophet Isaiah. This is 8th century BCE, and it was found within the fortress of the Jebusites that was long abandoned by then. We are actually digging the city of David right now, finding huge amounts of documents from the ancient times. But this one was very thrilling to us, because for those who are skeptical about the Christian story of Bethlehem, I say we have a proof right now for the existence of ancient Bethlehem from the times of Jesus, from the times of King David, and there's no longer a question whether Bethlehem existed. Yes, it did. We found that spot right in the city of David.
Now, are there any other sites in the city of David that you want to talk to us about, or are we ready to go north to the Sea of Galilee?
I still have one amazing story, great, and that has to do with the first communion ever taking place in history, oh, and that is 1,800 years prior to the times of Jesus having the Last Supper with his disciples in the what we call the Last Supper room. 1,800 years prior to that time, an event took place within the Jebusite fortress right next to the Valley of Kidron, what was named in the Bible the Valley of the King. Why am I naming it the First Communion or First Mass? Because this was actually having wine and bread in a Canaanite time between the two first monotheistic persons ever lived in the world as we know them from the Bible. I'm talking about chapter 14 in the book of Genesis, when Abraham, Patriarch Abraham, comes to a place called the Valley of Shaveh, the Valley of the King, it says, next to ancient biblical city of Salem, and the king of Salem comes out of his fortress, and he greets Abraham with wine and bread. We are talking about a person called Melchizedek. Melchizedek, or in ancient Hebrew, Malki Tzedek. This person is not only named as a high priest to a one higher god, which is very rare in the Canaanite times, we're talking a monotheistic figure in the times of the Canaanites, but he's also documented by Saint Augustine, a great scholar of the Christian world who lived in the 5th century. Saint Augustine names Melchizedek and Abraham as something that is a prefiguration of Jesus. Why prefiguration of Jesus? Because if we remember, Abraham was binding Isaac as the Lord sent Jesus to the world to be binded and to actually come and sacrifice for us all. But the second thing is Melchizedek is a prefiguration of Jesus because St. Augustine says he brings bread and wine, unlike every other person in the Canaanite times that used to slaughter a lamb. And therefore, we're talking about bread and wine as a very significant finding for the early Christian times. And the place that this whole event just took place was actually open to the public last year. April 2014, we have opened that site within the biblical city of David in the Jebusite fortress. So now we can tell you and we can actually take you, everyone, to see where the first communion ever took place according to ancient scholars of the Christian world in the Byzantine times.
Tremendous. Again, just amazing information. So, let's head north then, and again, tell us about some of the wonderful finds up by the Sea of Galilee.
So, I'm going to take you right now with me up north to the western side of the Sea of Galilee, a place called Magdala, or in ancient times, Migdal. We know about Mary Magdalene, who adored Jesus from the moment she first met him. And that meeting took place, according to the scriptures, in a synagogue. Now, synagogues in the ancient times were meant mainly for preaching and teaching, not for praying as today. Mainly it was meant for preaching and teaching. Today, when the temple is no longer existing, we have synagogues for mainly praying. But in the times of Jesus, as we learn from the scriptures, Jesus actually talked to his people every time in a synagogue. Now, most of the synagogues I could take you throughout Israel are ancient synagogues, but they're late from the times of the Byzantine usually, or sometimes late Roman times, such as the synagogue in Capernaum, for instance, such as the synagogue in Chorazin, one of the four cities cursed by Jesus in the northern parts of the Sea of Galilee. The one that I'm talking about right now is an ancient synagogue lately found. In the year 2009, it was first excavated, again by British people, by the way. And this time, we are talking a synagogue that is not only in the scriptures, but the original synagogue that was found is from the 1st century AD, from the times of Jesus. It holds a beautiful artistic menorah within it. We're talking about carving and engraving of menorahs, such as the one that used to be in the temple. And this is actually the meeting place of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and she followed him ever since from that synagogue. So now groups can actually come to see Magdala and walk and even pray within the synagogue itself where Jesus preached next to the Sea of Galilee. This is one of those beautiful, significant new findings that one can enhance his reading in the scriptures.
Very good. And I've been to the shores of Magdala. It's just, besides that, it's just a beautiful and amazing place. So are there some other recent finds around the Sea of Galilee then?
Well, the serenity of the Sea of Galilee is always, I would say, escorting the faith-based communities that are coming to Israel. I would say that most of the friends, among the Christian friends that I have, everyone speaks always about the serenity and the quietness and the calmness that Sea of Galilee actually, you know, resides within him when he is next to the Sea of Galilee. I would like to take you right now to the northern parts of the Sea of Galilee. On the northern shores, there's a new excavation which is being excavated in the last 15 years, but it is not yet open to the public on a large scale, and this is why most people don't know it yet. And we are talking the biblical village of Beit Tzaida. We call it Bethsaida in English. And Bethsaida is actually not only just a biblical village, but when I say biblical, I mean literally biblical. Because Bethsaida is made of two different cities from two different times, which are located on the same ground. The first one is actually an ancient kingdom from the times of David, and it belonged to the ancient kingdom of Geshur. Geshur was a great kingdom on the northern part of Israel in the times of King David, and the daughter of the king of Geshur, who's called Maacah, is actually marrying King David as one of his wives. She will give birth to a son called Absalom, which is a famous, famous son because he rebelled King David, and when he goes to refuge, he's residing in the courtyard of his grandfather, which is the king of Geshur, and this is that same ground in Bethsaida. So first we have a kingdom from the biblical times of Absalom and King David. But on the same ground, 100 meters aside, you can actually walk on the pavements of a Roman fisherman village from the times of Jesus. This village is described in the Holy Scriptures as the place where Jesus recruited three of his most loyal disciples. We're talking Andrew, we're talking Peter, we're talking a place where his most loyal disciples are actually being recruited on the ground of Beit Tzaida. And if I may remind our listeners, the words in Hebrew, Beit Tzaida, has a great meaning. This is actually two words that stands for the house of fishermen. Jesus talks to his disciples and he tells them, follow me and you will be learning how to fish people, men, not to fish fish. And this is something very significant because one can actually walk and trace the wine industry from the times of Jesus. We have found in a private house, a wine house, including beautiful pots, made jugs made of pottery that has crosses engraved on them. These are one of the earliest Christian communities that can be found around the Sea of Galilee because in the first century AD, people were afraid to carve crosses on the jars since this was actually giving them away as early Christians, and they were pursued by the Romans. But still, in Bethsaida, we have those engraved crosses on jars of wine from the first century AD and from the times of Jesus. And I would say this is a significant find for the Christian world to show how deep the belief and the faith in Jesus was in these early times.
Now, are these pottery, are they on exhibition, or are they still being looked at?
No, they're yet being looked at, sir. And this is what we need to remember. What I'm giving you right now in this interview is like hot potatoes from the oven, things that are yet not being exhibited, or places which have only recently been open. And therefore, I urge our listeners to understand that if they have the opportunity to get to the Holy Land of Israel, and to see those sites for themselves, now they can do it. Only in the last decade, I said in my lectures that we are living in a fortunate time due to the fact that we can not only read the scriptures, but we can understand them way better than our forefathers who could not do the same because they didn't have those findings along. Many of these sites are actually being excavated as we speak, and you can make a special arrangement to come and see them. But yet they're not open to the public, even as a regular national park.
Terrific. Now, you've touched on something I think we want to go to, and that is, can you tell us about your job and also about why you would encourage our folks? I mean, you've been doing it throughout, but give us a good pitch on why you would really encourage folks to come to Israel, take the time, and actually experience for themselves what Israel actually has to offer.
I would say this. First, I'm a scholar. I'm a historian. I teach that information, of course, throughout universities. For many years, I was holding the position of the head of the National Tour Guide Course for the State of Tourism, for the State of Israel in the Ministry of Tourism. Meaning for 15 years, I've educated tour guides, which we take very seriously in Israel, because we want to give the best service possible to our people who are walking with us and following the footsteps of Jesus. So what we're doing is we're taking people throughout Israel, actually for 2 years course, which is equal to a full BA. And this is a very impressive program. Now, I was heading that program for a long time, and I had the privilege of meeting a lot of Christian friends throughout that time, and this is why I am taking people with me to see at any given time. I'm inviting you, basically, to come to Israel. I urge people to come and see the biblical sites themselves, because those biblical sites are there. They've been long there forever. But the thing is, excavations are yet taking place in many of those sites and bringing out new evidence. All these new evidence with the new technologies that exist today in the 21st century can take us to the Bible and, I would say, give us a thorough understanding and a better, I would say, vivid look into the scriptures. Meaning, if you once watched films in black and white, I did when I was younger, and if we once didn't have HD, full HD, it's like, this is how we read the Bible long time ago. This is how folks are reading the Bible in the UK today, when they don't have the opportunity to see things for themselves. I would say it's like taking an ancient movie, which we adore, and bring it into colors in full HD, and watching it again in today's technology. This is how you would read your Bible back home after visiting those sites in Israel. This is our privilege to take people of the faith to see those sites. And I would say, and I would urge each one of our listeners to consider coming to one of those tours. He would go back home and he would be a different person. He would understand the Bible differently, a lot more thoroughly, a lot more vivid.
And can we also give a plug to your website? Because there you keep folks up to date with all the different finds and all the different events that are happening. Can you tell us a little bit about your website in case our listeners want to find out more?
Yeah, sure, of course. We have two websites that are relevant to this. The first one is walkwherejesuswalked.com. That's a UK website, which is all, you know, fed with the information from the Ministry of Tourism. And the second website is my website over Jerusalem and a lot of the ancient Christian sites in Israel, which is called allaboutjerusalem.com. It's basically all about Jerusalem, as one word, .com. Listeners can go into these websites and experience huge amounts of information, stories over each and every one of the dedication churches in Jerusalem with the significant stories from the ancient times. You would be a lot more, I would say, rich after reading these kind of informations that are there.
And I would encourage our listeners to do so. I've done so, and it's a very, very profitable experience. Now, is there anything that we've forgotten or anything else that you would like to mention?
Well, there's one more thing that I would offer our listeners. For those who are coming as what we call FITs, a lot of the people from the UK are traveling on their own as, you know, independent travelers. And I would urge people to go down to the south part of Israel, which is less visited due to the fact that it's a lot more, I would say, it's far first, in Israeli terms, of course. Israel is a tiny country, but it's far. It's like 3 hours drive from Tel Aviv. But we are talking about the children of Israel coming from the desert, through the desert, and the whole Jewish and Christian, I would say, evolution and understanding of monotheism started out with the desert. Children of Israel never landed in the airport of Ben-Gurion next to Tel Aviv and then started, you know, conquering the country. They came from Egypt. They came from the south. Why am I giving you this? Because not only that ancient biblical Beersheba lies in the south where Abraham the patriarch once resided. Not only these, but in the south, one can actually trace the most ancient existence of churches of early communities of Christians that are still there to visit. I'm talking about the ancient Byzantine and Roman cities of the ancient traders, the Nabatean tribes, the traders that became Christian in the 4th century AD. One can actually walk today into those ancient churches. I've shown a lot of pictures on my lectures in the UK, and I think this is a great experience for one to come from the UK today and walk into a church that is actually 1,600 years old. This is not something that you can do anywhere in the world, but in the biblical desert of the Negev in Israel. And I think this is a great opportunity and a great experience for each and every one of our listeners. So I urge you to do this as well, if you have enough time.
Professor Shiloh, we thank you so much for all of your wonderful insights into the recent discoveries that archaeology is finding and helping us to better come to understand our faith and the scriptures. We pray God's blessings upon you and your continued work, and thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.